very much, ladies and gentlemen. This is the second night of the Wantok Pigeon Macbeth. We did another one last Saturday matinee. And one of our three reviewers, we've got three reviews, said as how, actually, my introduction was better than the thing itself. I've done two things in the intervening week. I've assiduously applied myself to my own performance, and I've unsprung my natural humorous rhythm. And plus, I've really had them practicing a lot. So, I'd like to talk mainly tonight about the first part about the Wantok movement. This actually began here on this stage last autumn. I can't remember now, October, November. I had this notion that the world could have a language. In fact, it was rather childish that the world didn't have a language. You know, like if a Hungarian arrives in Peking, he can't start talking, right? You know, it's difficult. And because it would be so simple. It would be so simple for there to be a world language. In fact, we have one easily by next Thursday. And what do you think? just put your minds to it for a moment. If you were to come up with a world language, a language that would only take 2 or at most 3 days to learn, was somewhat colourful and worth talking when you learnt it, how would you go about it? Here's one method. You round up thousands of geezers, none of whom speak each other's language, preferably illiterate. And you barbed wire them up in compounds. And you make them live and work and play together for years. And round the compound, this is to get the language colourful, round the compound we'll have Irish guards in the middle. And what will happen, you'll find, is that the people in the compound will begin to adopt and adapt the persecutor's tongue. Anyway, you don't have to rush off and do this, because I'm pleased to tell you the experiment has already been done. I'm proud to tell you it was us, the British, what done it. And the Great Lingo Experiment began back in 1862. You couldn't get funding in those days for vast linguistic experiments, so it had to be done under the guise of supplying the good people of Britain with cheaper sugar for their tea. And 1862 saw the opening of the first of the mighty sugar plantations in Queensland, Australia. Now, we would have had aboriginals working the thing, but they were tricky to catch. And so we went blackbirding and shopping for slaves up through what were known in those days as the Cannibal Island Chain of the South Pacific, the New Hebridean Cannibal Island Chain. That started at the bottom is Tanna, the little island of Tanna. And you're moving up through Eramango, Malekula, Pentecost, Efate, Ambrim, Tofia. And then for slaves, we carried on into the Solomon Islands. And then up into the great landmass of Papua New Guinea. Now, the significant thing about that part of the world is, just take the little island of Tanna. It's only about the size of 1.5 Sarks. On the island of Tanna, you've got 26 utterly different languages. Each tribe has an utterly different language. Remember how the tribe, reason being, they don't want other tribes overhearing their dinner plans. And the island of Malekula, hundreds of different languages. And it was discovered that this is really quite fine for slaves, if they can't talk each other's language. In fact, if any came from the same language group, they got separated into different compounds. And basically, the guards were Irish, and eventually this plantessum talk, plantation talk or plantation language, started to evolve. And then you can imagine, as the geezers were now being brought in now from Papua New Guinea, it became known in the plantations how you could teach them the magic of this language, how it could be taught in a couple of days. And it was done by song and dance and ritual. It was literally a language which was danced into the bones. And it comes to today where the New Hebrides is now the Republic of Vanuatu. They won their independence from us and the French in about 1980. And the language there, the official language, is Wolwantok, or as it's called there, Bislama. They call it Bislama. In the Solomon Islands, it's the same language officially there. They call it Pidgin. And in Papua New Guinea too, where the language is called Tok Pisin. And it takes really but 2 days to learn. This is as long as you go about it properly. If you, you know that the very slowest way to learn anything is to lie on your back listening to tapes. The next slowest way, of course, is sitting at desks and having a teacher. And then moving into quite fast, moving around and walking around. You can learn things quicker. And then, of course, singing and dancing, playing, arsing around and getting pissed is the fastest way to get here. And so my notion is... This is what I thought to do as my my millennium project. What I'd do is I'd offer this to the world. Why doesn't it adopt this language? You know, sometimes clever idiots say, what about Esperanto? It's already been tried. The thing about Esperanto, you've got to know this, it was never intended as a fast learning language. And indeed, I haven't spoken to anyone who's mastered Esperanto in less than 3 years. What the guy did who came up with Esperanto and what he was at was he was trying to come up with a perfect language, an improved language, so that you could get to more places in your thinking than you could with a regular language. So he took the best aspects of this, that and the other, all European languages, I think. And so, if you're Portuguese and you have to hit the little bit you nick from the Portuguese, well, then you'd learn that bit quickly, but the rest is going to be in the dark about. So Esperanto is really not a starter in the field. Anyway, this language, Wolwantok. You can see it written up there, some of you. Here it says, Wolwantok concept. Wol is simply the word for world. Wan, one. Wolwantok. Language, the Wolwantok. So it's already called that. And it's been very significant in the South Pacific because these were all tribes, and then you move on to islands and land masses that never had any unification or thought of it ever before, but have been united by this language. There is none at all any urgency to add to the vocabulary. Well, certainly not as it's used as a lingua franca. I mean, what you pick up in 2 days would be sufficient to talk to folk. When I was in Vanuatu, I learned it actually in an afternoon, with the fun of being there. I mean, it's very fast to learn it. In an afternoon, you can be talking to everybody, and you can understand them, they can understand you, but if you hear them talking to each other, well, you obviously don't know what they're doing. I mean, you'd have to be there longer for that. So just a minute. Let me just go through for you quickly why... It's so fast, so runaway fast to pick it up. It's because it's virtually got no grammar. It took me years to kind of master half German. Years. And I think, looking back, what took all the time is the tenses and the stress that tenses were very important and all that. I just looked at... a primer on German. It had, this is only the preliminary book as well, 80 pages on tenses. Yeah? This language, Wolwantok, doesn't have any. It turns out you never needed them. Yeah? If what you want to express is in the past, you simply bung in the word bin. The I is bin. Yeah? If it's in the future, which of course is never fully known, is it, what the future will be? The future, if it's in the future, then it's bambai, like by and by, really. B-A-M-B-A-E is how it's spelt in the Vanuatu spelling system. B-A-M-B-A-E, bambai is the future. If it's in the present, you would assume so, wouldn't you? If you want to pedantically express the nowness of the now, you could use this simple little word, N-A-O. And it's pronounced very similar to the English now.